My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
China narrowly avoids an economic contraction, and President Biden tries to reset relations with Saudi Arabia.
The war in Ukraine really snapped everything back into focus about how important it is to control global oil flows during a time of war and inflation and geopolitical fractures.
Plus, Sri Lanka's president officially resigns. What's next? It's Friday, July 15th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. China's economy saw its weakest growth rate in more than 2 years last quarter. In just a few minutes, we'll have more on what slowed the world's second-largest economy. Meanwhile, Chinese President Xi Jinping made a rare visit to the country's Xinjiang region in an effort to promote national unity. State media outlets carried brief footage showing the president making stops in the region and being greeted by musicians and dancers in traditional dress worn by the Uyghurs, a mostly Muslim minority group. The U.S. and other governments have accused China of committing genocide against the Uyghurs. China has denied allegations of mistreating them. Sri Lanka's prime minister has been sworn in as acting president. Sri Lanka's former president, Gotabaya Rajapaksa, officially resigned after fleeing the country earlier this week. The announcement is raising hopes the political turmoil will ease. Our South Asia correspondent, Philip Nguyen, says the country's next leader will be dealing with the same economic realities.
You know, it's still out of money. It's still unable to afford essential imports like fuel. Those economic realities on the ground are still likely to get worse before they get better, no matter who's in charge. The political chaos certainly hasn't helped Sri Lanka in terms of its negotiations with the IMF over a much-needed financial bailout and its diplomatic efforts to scrounge around for bridging funds to pay for essential imports. The IMF is now saying it needs the political uncertainty to be resolved to be able to progress top-level talks on the program.
On Capitol Hill, the U.S. House has passed a more than $850 billion defense spending bill for the next fiscal year. It's tens of billions of dollars more than the president requested, but lawmakers cited high inflation, Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and threats posed by China for the higher price tag. The bipartisan National Defense Authorization Act would increase pay for troops and aims to help reduce the cost of essentials for military families. The Senate is expected to pass its own version of the bill in the next several weeks. And we report exclusively that Amazon has been cutting the number of items it sells under its own private label brands, partly due to poor sales of many of them. That's according to people familiar with the matter. According to those sources, Amazon is also considering the possibility of exiting its private label business entirely to alleviate regulatory pressure. Lawmakers and others have criticized Amazon, saying it gives advantages to its own brands at the expense of products sold by other vendors on the site. Responding to our reporting, Amazon said in a statement that the company never seriously considered closing its private label business and continues to invest in this area. China is seeing its weakest economic growth in 2 years. The latest data from China's National Bureau of Statistics shows the country's gross domestic product expanded at a 0.4% annual rate between April and June. The slowdown marks China's worst since the initial pandemic lockdowns in Wuhan in 2020. Joining me now with more on this is Wall Street Journal reporter Rebecca Fung. Hi, Rebecca. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So, Rebecca, what is behind this big decline in the second quarter?
The biggest reason for the second quarter decline is, of course, the lockdown, which was imposed on many cities. The most of it is Shanghai because of the government's COVID zero policy. And I think it's important to remember that the lockdown is not just imposed on Shanghai, but also some other cities as well, maybe less wealthy and less in the news. But there's also cities in Jilin province in the northern China, and it's actually a province that has a lot of factories and farming activities going on. So the lockdowns there also impacted industrial productivity and disrupted farming. So the lockdowns, it's definitely the biggest reason, and it has quite wide impact on multiple sectors of the economy. So the big declines, mainly because of lockdown.
We've also seen this playing out in China's housing market. How is this decline overall going to impact global growth?
I think it's because China, since the global financial crisis long ago, has been one of the key sort of driver of global economic growth. And I think the fact that we could be facing a potential slowdown in China's growth definitely does not speak well to the global growth. But at the same time, I think China housing market has been one of the main dragging points for the Chinese economy, because basically they're grumpy home buyers who are losing confidence in the country's property market and have threatened to stop paying mortgages. And if it spirals up, then it can drag the housing market into a quite vicious cycle. And given the housing market's importance in the overall economy, this could be quite damaging. So yeah, with such a crisis in the Chinese housing market, the economy's recovery seems less likely to be fast.
Are we seeing any signs of recovery?
Yes, there are, but the recovery signs are so far quite modest, basically because many of the lockdowns were lifted, and therefore there is some kind of a pent-up demand for goods and services, and also for like cars and property market. But I think most economists do predict that the recovery will not, at least not be a V-shaped rebound. But yeah, we are seeing signs of recovery.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Rebecca Fung. Rebecca, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, President Biden's trip to the Middle East continues, what the U.S. hopes to accomplish and what challenges it faces after the break.
My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Saudi Arabia has announced new rules that will allow commercial planes from Israel to fly over the kingdom in increasing numbers. The conciliatory step comes hours before President Biden travels there from Israel in the second leg of his visit to the Middle East. So how is the trip going so far, and what challenges does Biden face? Joining me now with more on this is Wall Street Journal Middle East Bureau Chief Michael Amen. Hi, Michael. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So, Michael, with this trip, the U.S. is hoping to strengthen ties between Israel and Saudi Arabia. Are they any closer following his visit to Israel?
I think there's step-by-step progress toward bringing those two countries together. Israel definitely wants a public relationship with Saudi Arabia. For the Saudis, it's a much more complicated issue. They are the country that hosts the two holiest places in Islam. They're longtime supporters of a Palestinian state. And they need Israel to make progress toward a Palestinian state before there can be real normalization. At least that's their public line. So what I think we're going to see, and what we have seen, is that the Saudis will take small steps during this trip to normalize relations. That will include allowing Muslim Israelis to fly from Israel to Mecca directly for Hajj. Flights in general to fly over Saudi airspace from Israel to other countries. And those two things seem small, but they're kind of big breakthroughs, and they lay the groundwork for more normalization to come.
And has there been any success in uniting them against Iran's nuclear plans and broader involvement in the area?
I think that's where you may see more progress on that front. I think what we've seen so far is Israel has become very entrenched in the Middle East security infrastructure, and in that they're now part of Middle East air defense systems. They're part of the Middle East intelligence sharing network. They're part of naval exercises and military exercises across the region, working with Arab neighbors. That's something we just haven't seen before. And a lot of it was happening in the shadows for years. And what's happening now is an attempt to bring some of that out from the shadows and get it acknowledged. During the trip to Israel, Israeli Defense Minister Benny Gantz handed President Biden a list of security agreements that have been made in secret with Arab countries and asked him to press these countries to come out and more openly say they're working with Israel. And I think that's a big part of what Israel wants from this trip, is to become wholly integrated into the region. For Saudi Arabia, it's complicated, but I think the Saudis want a relationship with Israel. and they will take steps toward that. They may be baby steps right now, but they're willing to take steps toward that, and the Biden visit is moving that forward.
And what about Palestinians? How is President Biden hoping to bring them aboard?
The Palestinians have had a rocky relationship with the Biden administration. There was high hopes when he came in that there would be a wholesale change in the approach to the Palestinian issue from the Trump administration. In the end, in the Palestinians' view, the Biden administration has been unable to really reverse much of what Trump has done and is largely stuck with an approach that the Israelis have advocated, which is to make the Palestinian economy better, make life more bearable for Palestinians until there is more of a political landscape that would allow peace talks to start again.
And how complicated politically is President Biden's visit to Saudi Arabia, considering the human rights record of the country?
It's a really delicate balance for the president. On the one hand, at home, domestically, Mohammed bin Salman, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, is still toxic. The U.S. intelligence community released a conclusion in 2018 that he ordered the killing of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. And he has been shunned by much of the Democratic Party and especially its leadership for years. And so for the president to go to Saudi Arabia and likely meet Prince Mohammed one-on-one and probably be taking pictures with him, shaking his hand, those are optics that are not going to play well with the president's base. On the other hand, from a geopolitical standpoint, he absolutely needs to do the trip. He needs to reset relations with the Saudis. The war in Ukraine really snapped everything back into focus about how important it is to control global oil flows during a time of war and inflation and geopolitical fractures. And so he needs to bring the Saudis back into the Western camp. And so that is the balance he has to strike between the domestic politics and his base and the geopolitical realities.
That's Wall Street Journal Middle East Bureau Chief Michael Amon. Michael, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And finally, Elvis is back in the headlines. But will the king of rock and roll resonate with younger audiences? There are already some signs he's making a comeback. The Baz Luhrmann biopic Elvis topped the box office in recent weeks. And it's part of a careful growth strategy focused on shoring up the next generation of fans. Our Wall Street Journal gambling industry reporter Catherine Sayer has more on what's got the Elvis brand all shook up.
We're definitely in an era of nostalgia right now. And the Elvis movie is going to appeal to some of those longtime fans for sure. But for the estate, they're trying to expand that audience. So they're launching the show later this year on Netflix. It's an adult animated show that gives Elvis a double life as a spy. They've got this new Elvis Presley channel. So through content, they're trying to build this Elvis brand. And the company that is spearheading all of this, they say it's working and that Elvis's annual revenue has now grown to $80 million.
And that's what's news for Friday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli with The Wall Street Journal. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.